The golden rule says you should treat others the way you want to be treated. But an unfortunate truth is that idea doesn't account for the driving power of wanting to prove someone wrong or get even. Media moguls Vince McMahon and Ted Turner turned the 90s cable airwaves into an open war zone of professional wrestling with millions of fans. The global superpowers of the 20th century even threw down to be the first to send a man to the moon, just as a flex. There are stories where people crash and burn in perceived mutual hatred, too. Like naturalist Charles Waterton humiliating himself trying to bring down American birding icon James Audubon. But that's the beauty of beef. It's funny, it's dark, it's humanity in a nutshell. And it's a triple gold signal award-winning show from Next Chapter Podcasts. I'm Bridget Todd. Join me as I serve up the juiciest rivalries you've never heard of. Listen to Beef wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So the most important thing that happened this week in the world was that we found out officially.
Whoa. The most important thing that happened in the world was that me, you, Rebecca Bregman, and Tom Chacho got to see each other. That's actually first and foremost.
That is. Do you think that the people listening would agree that that's the most important thing?
I don't care.
They won't. But at that little meeting, we did do our research and discover.
We excavated some, like a woolly mammoth is what we
Which now everyone knows. We just happened to find out this information before other people did. And so we're reacting like we invented the information. But the bottom line is that the audiobook of Barbara Streisand's new memoir is 48 hours and 14 minutes in length. That is not a joke. Or an exaggeration. It even sounds like a joke number. 48 hours, 14 minutes,
which is a show.
It's not a joke. This is insane.
She wasn't like, I'm going to stop this at two physical days. She's like, I will give you 15 more minutes.
She did it on purpose.
To say she that it's it. More than 48 hours yep. long.
Yeah. It
the
is.
Unmitigated gall.
It is the most. But you know what? Barbara Streisand invented unmitigated gall
yeah,
and has
correct.
Deserved every stone. See what I did there? Like a gall stone. She deserves every single stone. I can't wait to read this book. I don't know what month I'm going to take a leave of absence from my job to read it because it is 992 pages. And the audiobook is supposed to be for, I want to get this done quickly. We cannot get this done. How will this get done? Quickly. I need someone else to read it and give me bullets.
Well,
I can't
Dominic,
sit through it.
You know, we're now right now in the time machine. So as of press time, it has not come out. But when this episode airs, I will already have been 24 hours into this book. So.
So is your plan to listen to it for 24 straight hours?
If I could, I would.
I'm not getting enough advanced details about like what
no.
it was like for Barbara to like, you know, smack Elliot Gould or fuck John Peters or any of the good shit that I, you know, was
well,
there a
you know
hand
why?
Job with Ryan O'Neill? These are the facts I need. On what page of the 992 does she start talking about dick?
I don't know if she's doing like she's going on Howard Stern.
Yes, which I cannot wait for.
Lining up to my phone to listen to that.
Absolutely.
As well. And I don't think she's doing any press before the day it comes out. Like we should have like 7people.com Instagram posts saying like Barbara Streisand says in her new book, blank, 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 blank.
Well, this
like
is what I'm saying.
Britney.
While you were off flitting about in Las Vegas this weekend, which we will get to in a moment, she was appearing on CBS Sunday Morning with Gail King. and she's doing, I think she's going to be on Colbert. So they were not lengthy segments. You know, they were nice, cute interviews, but
Barbara doesn't have time to be on a lengthy segment.
No tea was spilled that I hadn't heard before. Like, I've heard Roger Friedman said online that the book isn't very juicy. It's more like philosophical. So I am rolling one eye at that, because when I read a celebrity memoir, I want to know that someone in the book is afraid to leave their house after reading it. And yeah. I don't think that that's going to happen here.
I'm nervous that it's going to be Tolkien level of like, she's droning on and on for pages about like one place that she went to one time. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yes. Do you think she's world building with this memoir and it's the first of seven books? Welcome to Streisandland.
I think she's like talking about the Shire for like three chapters. And then she's like, then I started singing. You know what I mean? And then
right. does this make Jason Gould Frodo in this book? Think, would it be?
I believe so.
I will listen to it. I will be traveling a bit in December doing my holiday shows. So I'm planning on having Barbara accompany me on every flight. Because the important thing is this 48-hour book is read by Barbara Streisand herself, if we haven't been very clear. I believe there's an intro by Stephen Colbert, but then it is all Babs all the time. Now we know why it took her so long to write the goddamn thing.
What a voice to just have in your ears talking to you about God knows what cockamamie, like, fucking bullshit that she's going to be talking about. What a beautiful, soothing balm to just cover yourself with while you're flying this, that, there, everywhere.
This is how long the audiobook is. We've been doing this podcast for almost a year, and we have not recorded as much content as Barbara has with one book. We're at like 38 or 39 episodes. This lady was just like, I'm going to do a whole season of shit at one time.
Dominic, she has a lot to say.
Well, she did wait, you know, she is 80 years old. She did wait quite a long time to do the book. So I don't mind that the book is long. I do appreciate the comedic value of it being
48 hours long.
I mean, and also her releasing this right before my own holiday show has been a real gift to me, because being able to speak on stage about both Brittany and Barbara's dueling biblical biographies is a real gift. And here's the first line of the song that I'll be singing about Barbara's biography to the tune of People, naturally. It goes, Barbara loves talking about Barbara. The audiobook of her memoir is a weekend long. And I haven't even read it yet, and I'm already shredding it. I cannot wait. Barbara Streisand is an 80-year-old gift that keeps on giving.
Dominic,
teach the children.
No one is ready for you to sing that song on a stage.
It when interspersed with hey y'all. I mean, these are the books of this is the Old and New Testament of 2023. Yes. These biographies
of our lives, of our generation,
of our lives. Yes, it's sort of a bookend of our pop culture lives. Barbara, like, and
the
Brittany.
Fact that you are saying 2023 is personally offensive to me. Of our lives.
I hope that someone at the Recording Academy is listening, because if you don't have the duo of Barbara Streisand and Britney Spears presenting Album of the Year this year, you are not doing your jobs.
Dominic,
get it done.
Dominic Anthony.
Christopher.
Is
it Michael? Michael.
God, it's yes. Michael. You know that.
I smoke so much weed, Chris.
Dominic Anthony. If this happens, it's proven that everyone's listening.
I fixed the Grammys for free. It's not. Yeah. I just fixed all of it. It doesn't even matter.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
You and I
Grammys.
Will both faint wherever we are. We'll just fall over and not be able to get up for 48 hours.
And
that's
also,
what will happen if that happens.
With the holidays coming, Chris and I actually also hire out to go to your parties and pass out. Like, we will do that for any in public. Like, if you need someone to end a party or get out early, we offer that service where we will go anywhere and just fall down, honestly, pretend to be drunk or I think I have COVID. We'll clear a room with that, honestly. Like, please hire us.
And then fall and then boom, 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 boom. You've fallen on this podcast. You'll do it. You'll do it at the drop of a hat.
Well, everyone knows I keep a fainting couch in my clutch, so it folds out just in case.
A compact fainting couch. That should be our merch.
What? That we whore ourselves out physically to pass out?
Our merch should be a compact fainting couch that you can put in your purse.
Okay, well, we'll have to. Who's going to build that? It out. We're going to have to call. Do we call Mark Cuban? Do we go on Shark Tank? I don't know what to do. I just learned about money laundering last week. I wouldn't even know how to do that.
Wait, know that like I was trying to bring up money laundering. There's like something that's going on in Beverly Hills where Dorit is like got $10,000 in cash stolen from her at the grocery store, allegedly. And I was trying to like explain it. I was telling my friends like, well, now that I know everything about money laundering, it's clearly this. And like... Clitorally, I was like going to try to explain it and then was like, okay, never mind. I have no idea what I'm talking about.
Listeners, it's been quite a weekend at Fixing Famous People, by the way. And I know we talk about the vast decades of difference in mine and Chris's ages. I don't think that would have been proven more than with our weekend plans this past weekend. Chris will fill us in a little bit. Chris has been at BravoCon in Las Vegas for several days.
I'm still here.
On Friday night, went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction. That was many days ago, and I'm still recovering from it. And I didn't even drink. So it was just a lot of walking and dancing. And by dancing, I mean just sort of swaying. Because I'm 52 years old, and I was the youngest person in that room. Like, stop. I'm not even joking. I'm not. I felt so alive.
Tell me everything.
We're going to start with the Rock Hall before BravoCon. Yeah, absolutely. All right. It was 4 hours and it moved because it was airing live on Disney Plus. So there were no commercial breaks. I didn't think it was going to be that long, but I got to see, I will say, many people perform live who I have never seen perform live, like Willie Nelson and Missy Elliott and New Edition. And
what?
Shaka Khan. Like, I've loved all these people, but I've never seen them perform live. Wait, and Dominic? They just killed it. Missy Elliott and closed the night and was by far the best performance.
Look at the hair on your forearms,
Chris.
I have goosebumps.
You really do have goosebumps.
I love Missy Elliott so much. She is such an important part of me growing up and like learning what artistry was. I wish you were so jealous of you. It hurts me physically.
Queen Latifah introduced and induced. Let's say induced. I know it's
induced.
Wrong. Queen Latifah induced Missy Elliott, which you can take anyway, and probably also has happened that way as well.
How dare you? I did not know. She deserves to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. She should have gotten inducted. She should have been induced 10 years ago.
First female rapper induced into the Hall of Fame.
As it should be.
Yep.
I'm holding myself back from going on a diatribe about how important Missy Elliott is to American music. I'm so jealous of you. And I thought I was coming here with like a little bit of like guns loaded to like make you feel jealous of me. And I would have traded every single thing that I did this weekend to see Missy Elliott perform and then be induced.
Do you know how many housewives are going to find you on Instagram and start shaming you for saying that?
I don't care. All right, good. That's the truth.
I don't either. It was great. Latifah, induced her. She performed Latifah. And they, why is that funny? That's her name. Should I call her Queen?
You're just like calling her by her last name. And
Latifah.
It's like,
first of all, Latifah is not her last name. It's not on her driver's license. Her name is Dana Owens. Anyway, Queen. We'll just call her Queen. Queen. And so then Missy did like a 10-minute medley of all of her hits. And you forget, she's not even that. I mean, I believe she's just in her early 50s, but there's a lot of music there. Like a lot.
So many songs.
And when she accepted, she was very emotional. And by the way, I think it's going to air on ABC in January, but should be streaming on Disney Plus right now if anyone wanted to watch the 4-hour behemoth that we sat through. It was... When she thanked her mother was in the audience, and you're gonna pass out.
I'm gonna cry. I'm gonna start crying. I don't think I can hear that.
She said that tonight was a big night because not only was she being induced into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but her mother was in the audience watching her perform live for the very first time, because she never invited her mother to come see her because her mother belongs to the church and she didn't want to be saying the P word and One Minute Man in front of her mother on stage. And tonight was the night that she did it. It brought the house down. It was a wonderful moment. Listeners, Chris is legitimately crying. He's legitimately crying. You are younger and gayer than me right now. I've never seen someone act gayer than me in the room. You've unlocked a new fucking world right here. Oh, God. Please tell us what she means to you.
I can't. I'm going to start crying. I can't. I remember being on AOL, like dial-up internet, and like when AOL Music was the thing that you would be able to watch, like you would be able to watch some of the music videos like on demand before like YouTube existed or like anything was on demand ever, but you could watch the music videos as a file on AOL.
Sure.
And I would watch over and over and over and over again the video for I'm Really Hot and 1 Minute Man and obviously Get Your Freak On.
Right.
Work It. Like I would watch those music videos and just like I wanted to be the little kids that were dancing. I was like basically their age, and I would like watch those little kids dancing and be like, I could be this. Like, why am I not this person? And then I would like learn all the moves, and I just remember being like seeing her videos and thinking about the fact that no one doing any kind of art was like doing anything like what she did. In the Work It music video, when in the beginning she's just being dragged by her feet and she's laying down and is being dragged across the ground and then like flips back up. In the Lose Control, whenever she's laying down in the sand and they have like, it's just her head and then they have like a sand body for her and she's singing the song doing that. And then there's all of a sudden just a line of people in blue hoodies and you can't see their faces and they're just doing all these, the artistry of her is so, it's unparalleled and it still is unparalleled. And no one that I've ever seen has ever touched how creative she is.
I don't even think I realized how much, like when I heard she was being induced. I was like, oh, you know, I don't dislike me. I mean, everyone loves Missy Elliott. It just seemed like a strange choice. But when they were, when Queen Latifah was doing the intro, she's just done so much stuff. And it's not just stuff that she's been a vocalist on. It's like, she's written for other people, produced for other people. I mean, she's pretty major. Who else?
She's a national, international treasure.
There's no doubt. Chaka Khan was insane as always. It's one of the many wonderful qualities. And I don't know if I have. I'm not sure if I've
I
seen
saw her perform once and she was doing like hip gyrations and we were screaming. I was like, Hassan and I were screaming bloody murder. It was the best shit of our lives.
George Michael was inducted by his Wham bandmate Andrew Ridgely, and it was wonderful and emotional. And they had three singers come and sing. Miguel sang Careless Whisper. Adam Levine came out and sang Faith. I wasn't that thrilled about that. And then Carrie Underwood came out and, what did she sing? Jesus to a Child? I can't remember. She sang One More Try.
Underwood.
Apparently he was a big influence on her.
Lord.
I went with my best friend, Mark, and we were with another friend who flew cross country to see George Michael inducted because she's that big of a fan. And I lost count of the amount of times I looked at her and said, it's really rude that George Michael didn't show up. She didn't think it was funny either, but I probably said it like 24 times. Willie Nelson, woo, man, he is old, but he can still command a room. I mean, he's 90 and can still, fucking life. Like, they could have talked about it. That's someone who needs a 48-hour audio book to talk about his life.
Has he written a memoir? He should.
I don't know.
He's 90 years old. What does he fucking care about anymore? But he should.
DJ Kool Herc was there. He's the guy who threw the party that is widely credited as the birth moment of hip hop 50 years ago. He was there. He's also quite long in the tooth, but brought the crowd to their feet and full of tears. It was wonderful.
You really saw like a historic.
It was insane. I really was. I thought I was going for like a 90-minute twirl. Yeah. Let me get on a step and repeat. I didn't take any pictures, in fact, because I was so wrapped up in what was happening. Never happens to me. I'm easily distractible. I'm like a cat with a laser. Like, it doesn't even matter who's in front of me. I'll just walk away. And then Sheryl Crow opened the evening, and she is...
Love Sheryl.
I mean, the takeaway from Sheryl for me was that she is 61 years old and looks like she was frozen in time. Like, yeah. I don't understand why, when we're talking about people who look so much younger than their age, that she's not part of that conversation. Like, it should always be just like, there's Michelle Pfeiffer, there's Sheryl Crow. What are the secrets? Like, she looks at least 20 years younger than her actual age. It's insane to me.
There's Michael Douglas. Yeah, we get it.
Michael Douglas is actually the rare celebrity that looks 20 years older than his actual age. I feel like instead of keeping a fainting couch in his clutch, he should carry a coffin, because it's any moment. He has looked near death for, I can't even imagine how long.
I knew you were going to love that one.
I am offended that anyone at Marvel would try to convince me that Michelle Pfeiffer would have sex with Michael Douglas. I think
everyone listening to this podcast knows that you. That's how you feel.
Put Michael with Judi Dench, someone more age appropriate. Like, that's fine.
How dare you try to throw him on your girl?
Well, she's a professional actress. She could.
Correct.
She could just warble through it. Now, wait. So I did not think we would be talking about The Rock Hall this long, but it was a wonderful night. And thank you to Mark for.
Well, I didn't think you were going to make me cry also.
I love that I made you cry about something so wonderful. So now when I need you to just pause for a minute, I'm just going to start singing One Minute Man on this podcast. And then you'll burst into tears and I can have the floor.
Yeah.
Please tell us all about BravoCon. You are still at press time there in a bathroom in Las Vegas. Okay.
It was truly, you know, we do a very select niche job, and you hear that there's fans, and you know that there's fans, and people might message you on Instagram or like talk about, you know, this is my favorite show, or you're at a party and you talk to someone and you said, oh, I just worked on the show, and they're like, I love that show, I've seen every episode of it. And there's a very complicated relationship that I'm sure that we all have with that. But being able to see all of these fans come to this stage and be like rabidly obsessed with what you do as a job is like, it almost threw me for a loop the first day, because I was not prepared for those emotions to happen to me. Does that make sense?
What emotions, from them, or were you feeling a certain way?
Being there and being like, oh, this is like what I like am part of this big thing that does this.
Right.
And these people, as like a Housewives producer, all over the world to come here and like take a picture with Teresa or, you know, Dorinda or, you know, the people that are my coworkers every day.
I mean, they are your coworkers, essentially. You're both being paid to be there. Yes. Did you meet any housewives that you hadn't met before?
Well, you know, I met so many Bravo celebrities that I did not meet before. Right. But I had one person in mind of like who I was going to fangirl out over and like be completely not like
who
an industry person and just completely be a fan of. And that was the one and only Miss Lisa Barlow from Salt Lake City.
Oh.
And my friend Chiffon was working BravoCon, and she was like, Lisa's going to be on a panel at this time. Go there and you can meet her. I've been telling her since we've been shooting Real Housewives in New Jersey. I've been like, I love Lisa Barlow. I love her so much. She's my favorite one. I can't believe you know her. I'm obsessed with her. And again, like, I don't do this for any other person. I walked over to her and was like, I'm obsessed with you. I love you, Chiffon. I tell every day how much you're so great. I like, didn't even say like, hi, I'm a producer on this network. Like, I like didn't even explain who I was. I just was like a straight up fan and was like, can I please, I need a photo with you. I must have a photo. And she took a picture with me, and it was, she was great. I love her. So I love her so much.
Like, she's like, for you, she's the Cher of Housewives, basically.
For me now, yes, because like all the other people that would have been in that position now, I've now known for a decade. And so it's like not exciting.
Plus, they're your coworkers.
I'm seeing my coworkers.
They're your colleagues. Right.
But when I tell you, the fans are like, speaking of Cher, I was with Sonia at one point and we turned the corner. And Sonia Morgan, when I tell you, you would have thought Taylor Swift was walking.
I'm sure.
Like, down. I'm sure. Like, it was wild. But it was cool to see. It's cool to go to a panel and then like see the trailer for a show that you did and see that like a shot that you filmed on your cell phone is in like the worldwide trailer for a show. And things, right. You get so desensitized to like what we do, I feel like, a lot. And so to be able to go here and see this, it was like a big reminder that like what we do is some people's like favorite thing in the whole world.
I find that a lot. It takes me by surprise as well. Mm-hmm. That happens to me in strange moments because you do, and I'm doing this even longer than you do sort of get desensitized just to fame in general. And then sometimes I just meet or see somebody and I'm like, whoa. Like, I sort of felt that way when I saw Willie Nelson on Friday night. I was just like, I'm seeing Willie Nelson perform, and that's, I've never seen that before. And it's a big deal. He's a big deal. I met Gloria Estefan recently, and the same thing happened where I was just like,
you were like, oh, this person is an absolute
icon. I was starstruck. Yeah. I'm like, you are a true living legend, and I'm just here like shooting the shit with you, and I should actually be cleaning your shoes with my tongue you are a goddess.
I met Lisa Barlow. Same thing.
Right. Yeah. Because Lisa Barlow is often compared to Gloria Estefan or Willie Nelson.
All the time. When I tell you I am a salt lick, like I have no moisture in my body. I am exhausted.
Oh God, you have to hydrate. Use those packets.
I need the packets. I'm dead. Like, I am so exhausted, but it was so much fun. I got to meet so many people. Oh, guess who? Walk in for the first day that I'm there. Within 2 minutes, guess who I run into?
Tom Sandoval.
Brian Moylan.
Get out of here, friend of the
pod. First person I speak to when I walk into BravoCon.
I love it.
I'm like, hi. And he's like, oh my God, hi. I met Danny Pellegrino. I met so many other, like Ryan Bailey, the one girl from Two Judgy Girls. I met all these podcasters that they were like, you have like a podcast too? And I was like, yes.
What do you mean? Do we have a podcast too? It's the number 7 podcast in the nation this week.
Sure.
I keep a different chart.
It was great. I don't know. I just had so much fun. I don't even think I've like really processed this. When I'm home, I'll then process it and be like, wow, this was amazing.
The real question is, how were you able to function knowing that you were in the same city as Celine Dion for 72 hours?
I wasn't.
She wasn't there?
She doesn't live here anymore. She's in Canada recovering. But have you seen, by the way, that she's like back on the streets?
Well, I saw that, but I thought that took place in Las Vegas.
In Canada, I think.
Oh, I don't know.
She doesn't live here anymore, I don't think.
We'll let the viewers.
I could be wrong, but I have seen her here in Las Vegas before, so.
Got it.
My girl, but I'm over the moon. I'm surprised we didn't lead with this because so much has happened that I forgot.
About Celine.
The fact that she's like out in the world and not like dying is like a beautiful, like I'm moved to tears.
She went to a Montreal Canadiens hockey game and she took her 3 sons who are, somehow they're all age 35 to 40. I don't understand how this has happened, but
they grew up so quickly.
Her kids are so huge and old. It is insane. But she looked very good because I know that she's been ill for a number of years, but she looked great.
I'll cry again if I talk about it too much. Like, I'm so happy that she's at least like okay, because she's my she is my share.
Maybe you are so dehydrated because you can't stop crying about all of these women that you're meeting.
Oh, but speaking of crying, I did come face to face with one of our clients.
Who?
And that client was Tom Sandoval. Did I tell him that I had done a podcast episode about him? Of course not. Did I tell him that I know that he knows who I am because he listened to the episode and then did exactly what I told him to do? Of course not.
But I saw photos of him. Was he wearing that kilt? Because he said he wasn't wearing anything underneath that kilt.
No.
I would have crawled under that kilt if I was next to him. I think. But I know
what I will
tell
you
is that he's a piece of shit, but he's a hot piece of shit.
What I will say to you, he's hot in person.
Yes!
And friend of the pod, Aaron Bagwell. Met him in Schwartz, and she still hasn't recovered from it.
I would imagine.
She's on another level. She just kept texting back, I am not okay, I am not okay, over and over and over again. And then when I called her, she couldn't even form sentences because she was like actively having a mental breakdown about the fact that she got to see them.
That is fantastic. I read somewhere that, what's her name, Sheena, pulled Tom aside and gave him a piece where she doesn't like the way Tom's been talking about Ariana. It's like, Sheena, you know what? Go live your life. That's this. Sandoval was never about you.
This
move
is not the
on.
Time for this.
No,
this is not
it's
the time
not
for
the
this.
Time.
Do it
Let
on the
Tom
show.
Live. Look.
Guess what? Also, do it. I'd love to see that on the television show called Vanderpump Rules. That's
sure.
what I'd love to see.
Also, yeah. Tom cheated on someone. You know who else has cheated on someone? Like 90% of the people you know, Sheena, including probably you, the person you're with, and most of your close friends and family. We got what we can out of it. Let's just move on. Let Tom live. I need him to date a million other people, and I need to be one of them. Let him live.
No, yeah, you were ready. I should
let
have
him
slipped,
live.
I should have slipped him your number, is what
you
I should have.
You should have, yes,
anyway.
He has
anyway.
It. He has my number. Please go to Chris's personal Instagram to see how nicely he was dressed. He looked like a cast member on one of these shows. He just blended in very well there. You look like a model. You look like Lindo Evangelista. That's what we're going to call you.
Lindo.
You're
so stupid.
It was gorgeous.
Speaking of being models and shows.
Yeah.
You have a holiday show coming up.
I have a holiday show coming up. And there was a bit of a scare last week because on Halloween morning,
we haven't even spoken about this episode's going to be 2 hours long. I'm so sorry for everyone to say, go ahead.
No, I'm sitting here Halloween morning doing my job, looking at cuts. And I get an email from the venue in DC where I was performing called Crazy Aunt Helen's. And they're like, hi, I just received an email from our majority owner who has informed me that we are closing this venue effective immediately. So if anyone has travel plans to come here, please change them. And so all they did, many people had already bought a ticket to the show, even though it's in December at a small venue, but they just refunded everyone's money in DC and didn't explain why. So then my phone started blowing up. Are you okay? Why did you cancel? I'm like, oh my God. Anyway, I had to hustle. I know what point of this story you want me to get up to, and I'm going to get there, Christopher,
correct.
But I will tell you
I
that
have my text messages to you on the ready.
The DC, the DC date has been rebooked for December 10th, and it's going to be at the DC Comedy Loft, who graciously is letting me perform there at a holiday weekend on short notice. So I believe most of the people who had bought tickets have already been made aware, but if not, December 10th in DC, along with six other cities. Please go to my website. We start in Chicago on December 1st. We go everywhere, and then we end in LA on December 20th. But the moral of the story is that when I texted Chris the body of the email that I had received from the venue called Crazy Aunt Helen's, it turns out that the majority owner's name was Mary.
Wait, hold on. Sit down if you're standing up right now, people.
No one.
Continue.
Will anyone think this is as funny as we automatically
yes.
do?
Yes.
Her name was Mary Quillian Helms. Say it again.
He sends me the text message that says, dear performers and friends, like, I received this news, blah, blah, blah. And I said, oh my fucking God. And then he goes, never in my life. And I said, also, how dare you be in touch with someone named Mary Quillian Helms and keep it from me? And then I texted back again, all capitals, Quillian. And you sent me back, all capitals, like 90 million ha-has. And then I have never spoken to MQH! Exclamation.
So not only is this woman who, by the way, I've never spoken to her before. No one speaks to the owners of the clubs where we're fucking performing. I've never spoken to this woman before, never even heard of her, but she is now a term in the Fixing Famous People glossary, which you can get by joining the lowest tier of our Patreon. If you'd like to see that glossary, it now includes MQH, Mary Quillian Helms, cartoon villain who shut down her DC club because I was performing at it. Oh, I did use a British accent there. My friend Danielle says I slip into it. She was right.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Patreon, we got a lot of subscribers. People
thank
are
you
loving
all.
The.
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you guys all. Seriously. This is, we were like, maybe two people will do this. And so many of you have signed up. If you haven't yet, please go check it out. Patreon.com/fixingfamouspeople. We have three tiers. You get so much with each tier. And we're really, really excited that so many people have already signed up and are, you know, championing this show.
Now, we have to get over to our fixie and our guest, and we are leaving out a lot of stuff. So come back next week. We'll be talking about Cher all of a sudden being the nation's number one pop star, introducing Santa Claus at the Thanksgiving Day parade, lighting the Rockefeller. I don't. She's also 1,000 years old. This is a real, this is the career bump that Cher needed, this Christmas album.
She's a living legend.
Living legend. I just can't believe she's going to be everywhere. I don't know what to do with my December. I'm going to have to cancel everything and just crawl into the trunk of her car, I guess, and just go to all of these openings. I don't know what I'm going to do. We'll also talk about, well, next week we'll talk about Chris's mother being furious with me that I said she picked out gay outfits for Chris when he was an infant.
There's nothing really to say. She goes, those outfits weren't gay. And I said, yes, they were.
They were. First of all, I resolved this weekend when I was chatting with my cousins. I was like, anything that you put an infant in is just going to look gay. You could dress your one-year-old in a football outfit, and I would be like, that is such a cute gay football outfit. You just do all infant clothes look gay. I don't know what else to say. I'm not indoctrinating anyone. It's just there's no way baby clothes just look gay. Period. And
anyway, we are so, oh, God. I don't even know what to do with myself. I've cried. I've laughed. We got to get to our guest.
Do you read a movie or TV review and wonder if you and the reviewer watched the same thing? I'm Julia Washington, host of Pop Culture Makes Me Jealous, and every episode my guest and I examine a different pop culture property, past and present, and how it impacted and influenced not only society, but us as well. We take a look at the reviews from the people that we are told we should be listening to and reflect on how that makes us feel, as well as, do we agree with them? We've covered topics like My So-Called Life, When Harry Met Sally, and Bring It On. We dug deep into Ted Lasso and Monica Lewinsky and the Depp Heard trial. So if you have an ex or two like Jordan Catalano, rejected the notion that men and women can't be friends, or always rooted for the Clovers over the Toros and wondered why no one else did, then this might be the show for you. You can find Pop Culture Makes Me Jealous anywhere you find podcasts.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
All right. We are tackling a big public figure, I think.
That's fat shaming right off the bat. You're starting it. Right off the bat. He didn't even give it 10 seconds before you just got vicious, Chris. How dare you?
Oops. Lena Dunham has a lot of credentials, and so I needed someone with a lot of credentials to come and talk about her today. Our guest is Bridget Todd. You might know her from her podcast, Beef. She has a laundry list of other things that she is responsible for, so I'm going to let her talk about them. Welcome, Bridget Todd.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
And we are excited to have you.
I have a master's degree in Lena Dunhamology. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, I know quite a bit about her career and work, but I'm excited to dig in.
Tell us before we start a little bit about your podcast.
So Beef is a podcast that I make with Next Chapter Podcasts, and it is all about the juiciest historical rivalries and dramas and beefs that you've never heard of. So if you like people being messy and petty and feuds, it is a podcast for you.
We do, by the way. Yes, that's
why we exist. Yes. Like if you're interested in the Ann Landers Dear Abby drama, so are we.
Oh, it keeps us up at night. Back. Yes. Oh, I love that.
Some of them are historical, some of them are more contemporary, but yeah, all the beefs that you've never heard of.
Ooh, I love that. Bridget, we begin every podcast by seeing if you, our guests, know the middle name of the person that we are fixing this week. What is Lena? And by the way, do we have a confirmation that it's not pronounced Lena? Does anyone know? Are we sure? Okay.
Have you heard her say it? Has she introduced herself to you, Chris? This is like when you asked if That's Gwyneth Paltrow's real name was Gwyneth, which we know it's not.
I did. And since then, I'm now an alternate pronunciation of that would be Gwyneth as well, which we didn't include. Until she introduces herself to me, I don't know what it is. Bridget, Christopher, what do you think Lena Dunham's middle name is? I'm going to tell you this. This is the toughest one that we've had so far on this podcast.
Is it not a common middle name? Is it uncommon?
I can't answer that.
Is it, I want to say Rebecca, but I know that's not correct. I don't know. It's something fucking crazy, right?
I wanted to say Marie because my middle name is Marie. And I feel like if you don't know a girl's middle name, odds are you could, Marie's a good guess.
That Marie or Lee, those are always, or Lynn, those are always good guesses. Well, Lena Dunham does not have a middle name.
Oh, God damn it.
Oh, this was a trick question.
Yeah. It was a trick question.
It's usually not.
It's usually, I mean, it's the same question every week. This week it's a trick because Lena Dunham is difficult, obviously, and we'll get into that in a moment. She does not have a middle name. In the past, she has referred to herself as Lena Lucky Fred Ned Cookie Milky Simmons Dunham. Turns out that was a joke. If you can believe it, she doesn't
that
have a middle name.
Wasn't her real middle name?
No. I mean, Bridget, I would assume, like the rest of the planet, that your first exposure to Lena Lena was on Girls on HBO. Am I wrong about that?
That is a good, like a fair assumption. But actually, my first exposure to Lena Dunham was Tiny Furniture. Yep. Yes, her first feature film, which I have to say, like,
was good.
Was good. It is like a legitimately good movie. You know, when I'm sure we'll get into it, but when people were like, "Girls, it's going to be the voice of a generation." I, having watched Tiny Furniture, I get what all those voices were like zeroing in on, because Tiny Furniture did feel fresh and new and exciting.
Right.
And it was at a time when like Netflix was starting to stream. Like it was, you had access to these smaller things that like we would never, 5 years earlier, we would have never seen that movie. It would have went on the festival circuit. People would have liked it. And then she would have gotten a job. And then we would have said, "Oh, what's Girls?" But the fact that it was like on, I remember being able to watch it on Netflix.
Yeah.
And it was like autobiographical and it was like very good. I don't know. She just did a really good job. And it was like, wow, this is like what you said, the voice of a generation. Like they,
but did
then,
the two of you know about this before Girls, or was it something you discovered it after?
It was like, I heard about it like as Girls was like becoming teased out that like the show was going to come and it was going to be a big deal.
And I had seen it before Girls, I believe before Girls was ever a thing. I was just like an indie movie, like one of those insufferable people that's like, "Ooh, what's this new film? I must see it. Noah Bomba. Oh, I need to like, I'm like that kind of person." So I had seen it and sought it out before Girls, before I ever knew what Girls was.
Little did you know, 15 years later, you would be on the world's number 14 podcast talking about it.
It's all come, I've been preparing for this moment my entire life.
For a long time, yeah.
Moment like this.
But that is really, Tiny Furniture was like her first big thing that like some people saw. And I want to say that like at the beginning of her career, it was very unfair how much they blew her up into becoming the voice of a generation.
Totally.
Like before the show even aired, it was like rabid fandom of like, this show is going to be the new Sex and the City, which is like, in my opinion, the only show to ever have more of a cultural impact on our nation is The Sopranos. Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. In my opinion, sure. The number one female-led show to ever exist.
Well, that was all you needed. I mean, they were sort of cursed and blessed with that statement before the show ever came out, because there were people who, based on, oh, it's the new Sex and the City, there were people who already absolutely loathed it before they watched even one single frame of it. You know what I mean?
I remember that being the vibe. I just think that it sort of got this unfair place that allowed a lot of people to kind of gleefully project a lot of things that
correct.
One show could not possibly live up to. But I remember, like, even before it came out, there was this, so the poster or like the image for the show was all four of the girls from Girls sitting on a park bench. And I remember seeing this like meme that somebody had created that was pointing out how all of them had famous parents of some kind. So like Lena's mom is Lori Simmons, a visual artist. I would actually argue that like Lori Simmons is very big in the art world, but I don't know that she's big in the way that like it's would not, allow you to get like,
she's not Brian Williams. I'll say
exactly,
that.
Exactly. Right. Like, I don't know that it was totally fair to make Lena the face of nepotism. But even before the show came out, people were pulling it apart in this way and talking about all the ways that it wasn't going to be representative of, you know, 20-somethings or how it was going to be. Like, yeah, there was a lot projected onto it even before it ever debuted.
And it was obviously, Girls was much more Golden Girls than Sex and the City, hence correct. The anal intercourse storylines.
Of course.
Thank you. Rue McClanahan from the beyond is still influencing our society.
What an icon.
Remember Dominic. When Blanche sat at the table and said, give me some cheesecake, I did some butt stuff. You don't remember that episode?
Oh, dear God.
It's pretty ingrained into my mind, actually.
You are correct. Because, like, at the end of the day, like, the biggest complaint and kind of, like, what the point of Girls was that, like, none of these women were likable characters. They all had problems. They were all insufferable. They were all annoying. And they all were, like, they all didn't do the right thing. And then think about how many other shows came after that where it was, like, I'm a mess. Like, I'm a train wreck. Like, I don't know how to do any. And we're like finally out of that. Thank God. Thank Jesus, Francesca Christ herself.
Right. But well, like, thanks to the Golden Bachelor. Yes, now we're finally out of it.
How dare you?
Because they all have it together.
It's almost a cliche now. Yes. But back then, that was new. You know, you had to sort of be, not only did you have to kind of, if you were a female character on TV, have your shit together, be aspirational, blah, blah, blah. You also had to be like thin and hot but also pretending that you didn't like think about like Tina Fey on 30 Rock, how the joke of 30 Rock is that, oh, she's so unattractive, but she's clearly an attractive woman, right? So like if you were going to be someone who was a little bit of a mess, you also had to be hot, but then everybody in the universe of the show thinks that you're not hot, and that's the joke.
Right.
Very weird times.
For sure.
Well, and that was the other thing, is that she was like naked every episode. Like, I remember everyone being like, stop being naked. And she's like, no, like, I'm going to make you look at my naked body while I have sex with very hot men. Mm-hmm. Adam Driver, who's now an A-list, way more famous than her.
Oscar nominee.
Donald Glover.
Yes. Or like, you're going to watch me.
Glover. What's his name? Sorry.
Danny Glover. Very controversial.
Childish Gambino. I'm forgetting his name.
I thought it was Danny Glover from the Lethal Weapon film series. No, the elderly gentleman.
That would be a weird episode of Girls.
But he would sort of fit in there, wouldn't he?
Perfectly. A little bit. Yeah. She was like, you will watch me like fucking like do splits on a dick. Like, you will see this body do that. And that was unheard of.
That's
HBO.
In the pro column for her, though, always.
Correct.
You know what I mean?
No,
like,
correct.
Body positivity and, like, having a different body in a space where there was only one kind of body
correct.
For decades. I mean, her appearing, she was on the cover of Vogue, right? And the controversy that it caused, because someone above a size zero was actually on the cover of that magazine. I mean, people were saying the meanest things. I mean, in defense of models, like, these girls starve themselves their whole lives to be on the cover of that magazine. And Lena Dunham has no regimen, and she just gets to go up there. And you're like, yes.
Yeah, like, listen to what you're saying.
Yeah. Like, are you listening at all? So we should start talking about some of the problematic things that she has done, because appearing on the cover of Vogue as a person who is not anorexic is not actually a crime. That's not something you need to fix. The one that popped into my head first was this thing that she said about her sister in her book. Bridget, do you remember?
Oh, yeah.
I have done a two-part deep dive in my podcast, There Are No Girls on the Internet, about this.
Well, I'm going to take a seat. Go.
Yeah. So I have a lot of information for you.
All right.
Lena Dunham's sibling is called Cyrus Grace. So Cyrus Grace is trans and uses he, him pronouns. But when Lena Dunham published her memoir, Not That Kind of Girl, that was not the case. And so the big kind of story or anecdote from that memoir is a couple of passages where Lena does describe some, I'll say, she describes things with Cyrus Grace that are sexual in nature. Some of them I feel like are normal things between siblings when you're young. How she writes about it is a little bit crass. And when that memoir was published, because it's published by Lena Dunham, it was like lots and lots of attention on it. There was like a intentional right-wing smear to misrepresent that passage. And so Ben Shapiro's then organization published an excerpt from that passage and said that Lena was having these sexual interactions with Cyrus Grace when Lena was 13 and Cyrus Grace was 1. But in fact, Lena was 3. They snuck a 1 in there. And so a lot of people believe that this passage describes Lena Dunham essentially molesting a 1-year-old baby, when in fact it's describing a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old doing things that I think most people might think are like normal.
Yeah. Also two babies doing, like, what are you even, yeah.
So it's funny because that is still a thing that endures. If you read any article about Lena Dunham, I guarantee you in the comments, it'll be like, she molested her sibling. She's terrible.
Well, that's the other, I was getting ready for this because I was like, okay, like, how do we talk about this? Because if I was remembering it, I was remembering that they were both like 13-ish. And that was like worse. But you're telling me it was a 1-year-old and a 3-year-old, which is like not as bad. And that book was huge.
I mean, maybe I'm under a rock part of the time, but this is the first time that I'm hearing that they're only 2 years apart in age. Is that possible? Chris, had you heard that before?
I didn't know, but again, I wasn't like paying too much attention to it. But
it changes the entire story. Like, it was always like a preteen or a teen touching a toddler. That's always how the story was delivered to me.
Yeah.
And so in fact, in my research before this very podcast, including two articles that are up on my screen right now, it makes no allusion to the fact that they were only separated in age by 2 years and that Lena was 3 at the time.
Yes. And yeah. And they're, neither of them are like verbal yet. Do you know what I mean? Like,
that
it's
so
crazy.
Fucked.
Yeah. It's fucked. And it's like one of those things where it's like, the only reason I know this, so again, don't feel bad if this is information that you're hearing for the first time, because there was a definite intentional, like, verbalized, vocalized right-wing media campaign to make her look bad. Ben Shapiro's organization, why can't I think of the name of it?
Well, why would you want to know it?
I know.
Move right along.
It's forgettable.
Yeah.
But they, you know, at the time, Lena Dunham was this
liberal. She's like a perfect target for people like Ben Shapiro, because she's like liberal, weird, fat, and ugly. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then she's like, and putting herself on TV naked. And he, like, please, that's like his trifecta.
Exactly. So, like, at the time, she had made this campaign ad for Barack Obama's reelection campaign that was kind of like cheesy, where she's like, oh, you want to do it with the first guy that you do it with should be important. You know, do it. By do it, I mean vote for Barack Obama. It's a little clunky, but like, it was like a big deal.
Yeah. Right.
She was a spokesperson for Planned Parenthood. Right. Like, she was a vocal, like, lefty liberal voice who was actually pretty good at like using her voice on behalf of like lefty social causes.
But, you know, as we're talking about her, and to be honest with you, I'm not like a fan or a hater of Lena Dunham coming into this. I know that she's, you know, said some annoying things. I think she qualifies for fixing famous people, obviously. But as we're talking about her, it was almost like a setup from the beginning. I mean, for HBO to set her up as the Millennium's answer to Sarah Jessica Parker, you know, to the generation below her.
Yes.
It is almost like you are being set up. So millions of people people who already hated millennials just used her as a representative for that entire generation. And
she
just came part and parcel of like a blanket bitterness toward the entire generation.
And she was given she was deemed that without earning it.
Right.
Like by the time when the show was coming out, it was like, this is going to be the show that defines a generation. That is like what people were saying. And that is like what the marketing of the show was.
Right.
And she was a nobody and no one knew who she was. And none of the girls on the show were anyone either. despite their parents being famous. Do you know what I mean? So it was like all these nobodies come being plucked out of obscurity to like, and they were co-signed into being like these spokespeople without their consent in a way.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
That's such a good way to put it. And yeah, I mean, it's not surprising to me that she, that of course that show could not live up to the wild expectations that were projected onto it and like that it was upheld to. And I almost feel like I remember getting into like a pretty intense argument with a good friend of mine where I was like, I don't like how Lena Dunham is being positioned as this voice of a generation. I don't think that's fair. And she was like, well, it's not fair that Lena Dunham has been, you know, cast in that way. She didn't choose that. And so it is this impossible thing of,
correct,
you can't help but being, you know, graded by this rubric that you never signed up for in the first place.
Correct.
Right. And so she's already controversial before she even has a chance to identify who she is to the world. She already has people hating her. And then the show was going to be provocative either way. So all it did, the pre-show press only made the show itself more incendiary. But then she later goes on to do things like compare Bill Cosby to the Holocaust. These are things that are not HBO's fault. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I haven't heard that. That's unfortunate.
You know what I mean? It's like, these are the things that you can't blame on, like, well, you were misrepresented. It's like, no. And she did apologize for it on Instagram. But that was just the first in a series of, and these, I believe a lot, most of the incidents that she's known for, the provocative incidents, happened after the book came out. I don't know the timeline, but it seems like the book, it was like, first it was girls, then it was the book, and then everything just started like piling on top of her.
Well, and she did a show, she was not in it, but she wrote a show for HBO called Camping. And
I've seen it, and I thought it was
absolutely incredible. It was Jennifer Garner was the main character, and I thought she did so good in it. And it was like, I don't know what you think, Bridget. I thought it was so great. And I remember that it, like, right after that happened, something had happened where someone came forward about the set of girls was really toxic or something, and it kind of like ruined the show. Like, they kind of like ushered the show through really quickly, and then I think they even took it off of streaming. Like, just because that had happened. But I remember being like, wow, she really is a good writer. This is a really good show. But like, I wonder if she started to like miss being in the press. Because there would be like, then she would say these things that were incendiary. She would do all the, like, she started to have all these like really wide swings with like comments or things that she would be in. Like, I wonder if she was like, oh, you guys miss me? Like, here's this thing I'm going to say about Bill Cosby. Like, I wonder.
These moments from her seem to happen like annually since Girls went off the air. You know, some of them are her fault. Some of them are from other people. Like, there was, I think Girls might have still been on when she had said in an interview or on a podcast that, that although she had never had an abortion, she had wished that she had one.
I remember that one.
In solidarity. And it was like, oh, girl, I don't know about that. I mean, I know you'd think.
Also, like, just don't say stuff like that. It's so annoying because, like, I understand what she's
saying.
I, like, get it, but it's like, no, like, just be of service to others.
Yeah. I mean, if I were being paid to fix Lena Dunham, that would be my number one bullet point. Like, don't say shit like that. Just be in service of others quietly in the background. And if you have thoughts, send them to the group chat. But you don't have to tweet them.
Yeah, if you're a magnet for shit, and this is the problem, she was created as a magnet for shit because HBO did her wrong by, you know, establishing her as like the 2000s SJP. And then you've got all this other shit happening. And when stuff comes to you, when the shit is being delivered to you, you have to respond appropriately. So when an actress files sexual assault charges against one of the writers on your hit television show, don't grab the closest microphone and vehemently deny it when you are supposed to be one of the people leading the movement against shit like that happening. Well, just don't talk.
and you told on yourself, because you should be the first person in line holding a flag for like Me Too, not
right
being
yeah. right
a supporter of someone that's being like allegations, or just shut your fucking mouth and don't say anything.
Exactly. Like this was, I always say, you like, this is the moment that Lena Dunham lost me forever. Like I, up until the point that this happened, I was like, well, you know, she said some things, but she's a good writer, blah, blah, blah. This, the way that Lena Dunham behaved in this whole incident was, there was no coming back from that for me. Like she put out a statement where she said that she had inside information that this, that the person making the survivor was lying. She was like, oh, trust me, I am privy to inside information that makes me confident that this person is lying. This was a young Black woman who was assaulted on the set of her show. So when you publicly call a woman of color a liar, saying that she's lying about like being sexually violated, you, there's no coming back from that. Like it's so wrong.
It's not to you to like say that it's good or bad. It's to you to say that like you're upset that this person felt this way on your set.
Correct. Then I don't know, maybe 6 months or so later, don't quote me on that, she came out in a piece, and I want to say Vanity Fair, and was like, even though I said that I had inside information about that proved that this person was lying.
Right.
That's, she said, I made that up. I had no such information. I think it was like a Women in Hollywood event at Vanity Fair. She brought the survivor's mother on stage and like apologized to her. Like that, this shit like fucked with my head. I just remember thinking like, this is fucked up. I thought it was fucked up to lie about it. Obviously it was fucked up to, in an article or an op-ed, admit that you lied, and then bringing her mom on stage to apologize. And in that apology, I will never forget it. She says, I've learned so much from you, and I've really learned that I have a lot of growing to do about how to be, you know, about, I have a lot of learning to do and yada, yada, yada. And it's like, honey, you were responsible for the livelihoods and the well-being of people. You had a responsibility as a showrunner. You don't, like, she did this like, oh, gee whiz.
Yeah, like gee willikers.
I didn't know what I was doing.
No, this is what she said. I was going to say her statement said, quote, when someone I knew, someone I'd loved as a brother was accused, I did something inexcusable. I publicly spoke up in his defense. There are few acts I could ever regret more in this life. I didn't have the insider information I claimed, but rather blind faith in a story that kept slipping and changing and revealed itself to mean nothing at all.
And I believe, like, don't quote me on this, but the survivor, her father is the actor Harold Perrineau, who was Mercutio in the Romeo and Juliet remake.
Oh, he was on Oz, too.
Yeah. He, like, fairly recently a year or two ago, tweeted in a way that made me feel like he feels like you just described, Dominic, where he's like, you know, you said that you're sorry. Guess what? I don't forgive you. Like, apology not accepted. Mm-hmm. Which that's, I completely get.
And that sucks, because it's like you said earlier, Bridget, like she was good at like being this like leftist, like, you know, little activist and like using her voice well. And then it's like to just shit all over that and show us that like those aren't your morals. And like, yes, it's one thing to make a mistake, but you're like actively trying to like blame this person and like for something that they are the victim of.
Right.
And I think this event is actually the reason that she needs fixing, because unwitting or not, she was the face of a generation. And by denying the sexual assault allegations, she fulfilled the right-wing fantasy that they all have about woke millennials, which is that it's all bullshit. Like, all of their causes are bullshit. And when push comes to shove, it's not believe all women. It's you're a liar. I know she has an illness. Does she have endometriosis?
She does have endometriosis. And it's clear that, like, her health has been, like, a chronic issue that she's hopefully, like, managing. I think she did some time in rehab for addiction. I think.
Oh my God, really? I did not know that at all.
To what? She was addicted to releasing statements to the Hollywood Reporter, right?
Yeah, it's a real problem.
To Twitter, I can tell you that much.
I can tell you I've come very close.
We're horrible. We are horrible people.
What did she go to rehab for?
She was addicted to denying sex assault allegations.
Yeah, it's a real addiction.
It is an addiction.
Because she still continued to put out movies. She had a couple of movies and she produced this HBO show, I think, what is it, Generation? So like she's still...
Which P.S. was amazing.
That was a great show. That was a great show.
They took it off.
Oh.
It's gone. It was so good. I'm so upset. Like we were mourning it when it left HBO Max. We were like mourning that it was, because it was so good.
I have to ask, is it one of those shows that they... just like stopped making, or is it like I couldn't go stream it now if I wanted to? It's like
you can't go stream it now if you wanted
to.
And it was a thing about like it was back when they were all like, oh, they're getting rid of all these shows so they can like take a tax break from it and like have like a loss or whatever. And it was like a more queer, less sexual version of Euphoria.
Okay.
Like it was like kids in high school. They were all like discovering their sexuality and like coming out to their parents. And like, it was so good.
It was
like,
more queer than Euphoria.
Yes.
What was the setting? Richard Simmons asshole. Like how could it have been more queer than Euphoria?
I said what I said. Yes. Yeah, she has produced work since.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And good work. Like not, she is, that's the thing at the end of all of this, like she is extremely talented.
And I think that she, another way that I would fix Lena Dunham is, and I think that she's sort of doing this now, is just let the work speak for itself. You don't have to be involved in every conversation, every right. argument. I also think that you don't have to like take the bait. Like if somebody, if you, I think that she, the last time I saw her in the press was she had tweeted, when I die, I want my body dragged through the gay neighborhoods. And they'll say she wasn't for everybody, but she was for us. And it's like, okay, that's cringe tweet. I wouldn't have tweeted it, but
also, you didn't have to say that.
Well, yeah, exactly.
The backlash was the queer community tweeting her back and saying, it's the most Lena Dunham white lady from the O's thing to do, which is to declare yourself a gay icon.
Is she, like, you can't.
That's not
gay
how it
icon.
Goes.
It's not like it self-proclaimed. Like you don't get to just be like, it's me. They love me.
It's not how it goes.
And again, like you did that so that people would write about it. Like, don't even tell me that you didn't. Like, tell your friend that. Like, text someone that. You know, if you really need to say that to someone, you can text someone.
Get a good.
You don't
chat.
Need to put it out to the entire world. Lena Dunham was like in the Bad Blood music video that's like about Katy Perry.
Oh
like
God.
Lena is one of the women in the video.
I didn't know that.
I did not know this.
Yes. Wait, am I wrong? Hold on.
You're probably right because they were like, do you remember how Taylor Swift, when people would
glob
ask,
on to anyone with fame? Yes.
Yes. Well, she would be like, oh, I'm not a feminist, blah, blah, blah. And she credited Lena Dunham with like giving her feminist awakening that she says that the reason why she became a feminist and political is because of Lena Dunham.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay, so she's done some good in the world.
Yeah.
Right. She made Taylor Swift, and then Taylor Swift kicked her out of the squad for being overweight. That's the headline from this podcast.
Do you two identify as Swifties?
We don't.
Okay.
No.
Sadly.
Neither
I'm
do
not,
I.
Like, I'm not a hater, but I wouldn't. I'm not a Swiftie for sure.
I'm a hater, but I also realize that she's like the most like powerful person in music.
Yeah. I mean, it's not even with Taylor Swift, it's not even like girl power for me. It's like, hey, ordinary people can be famous too. Like that's great because there's a big ordinary streak happening there.
Yeah.
I don't get
Lena Dunham is basically the third person to be seen in this music video. And she's smoking a cigar in the first shot that you see her.
What?
Just saying.
Is it a cigar or a blunt?
No, it's a cigar.
I have to tell you that I know we're about to go into the fixes. Whatever comes out of my mouth for the fix.
Is the first time you're hearing it.
Yeah,
about it.
I don't even know. I am counting on the spirits of my ancestors and Judi Dench and Cher to come through me and Mariska Hargitay to come through me and help me help Lena Dunham because I have no idea what to do to fix her.
All right, let's pitch. Okay, Bridget, you know. Sorry. Okay, Bridget, this is the part of the show where Dominic and I are going to both pitch ideas of how Lena Dunham can get back in the good graces of society. This is a hard one. I did not realize the extent of, I don't know if I would have put her on the list if I realized the extent of how she lied about, like,
molestation, just someone's, yes, denying sexual abuse.
Yeah, like, just straight Holocaust. Up being like,
you didn't know how weird and dark this was going to get.
No, I really didn't.
It's a triple crown.
Here we go.
Not the triple crown. It is molestation, lying about sexual assault, and the Holocaust. It's a real hat trick.
Dear God.
All the people we refuse to fix, and now we're fixing this bitch. We should be ashamed of ourselves.
Wait, who are the others that you were like, that's a bridge too far. We will not fix them.
Russell Brand.
Ooh, yeah. Can't be fixed.
He's the first one that pops into my head.
Kanye West.
Can't be fixed.
When you said Russell, I didn't know if you were going Brand or Simmons. Ooh. Both of them are pretty bad.
Yeah, I don't think Russell Simmons is fixable.
No, we wouldn't do Russell Simmons. We wouldn't do Russell Simmons. And that wouldn't be fun. Like, we do want it to be funny at the end of the day.
Okay. Not like dark legal advice.
Right.
Yeah.
No, he's too unhinged. Like, those videos of him, like, on the yelling on the camera phone, too unhinged. Too much.
Yeah. All right. Lena Dunham.
There we go.
It's funny because my pitch is exactly what Bridget said. Let the work speak for itself. You are not cut out to be a showrunner. You don't have, you're too explosive. You either want to be an it girl, which you're not anymore, or you want to be someone that works. Okay. And you can't be both. Sorry to say. And that's why your career doesn't fucking work. And it doesn't make any sense. What Lena Dunham is going to do is that she is going to be a staff writer on a show. She is going to take herself down a couple pegs, and she is going to show up to work, and she's going to have her little Bob, and she's going to get her little computer out and click-clack them keys and say, uh-huh, okay, great. I can have that draft by tomorrow morning. And she's going to shut the fuck up about everything and just do what she does best, which is be a very good television writer. Everything she does is really good. And if you look back on Girls Now, like, after the initial rage of it is over, like, it's a very good show. And when you watch it now, you're like, wow, this really did inspire so many things that, like, even though I'm, like, glad that they don't exist anymore, like, she did really change the landscape of TV for a little bit. So what she's going to do is just be a really good writer, work on shows, have her name in the credits sometimes, maybe work under an alias, and then maybe 10 years from now, be a showrunner again. Because according to her apologies, she, like, has a lot to learn, and she, like, is just a little girl that doesn't know anything about anything. And so you shouldn't be the head of a show. You shouldn't be, as a 24 or 5-year-old, be the showrunner of a show with a million bajillion dollar budget. Like, you actually aren't cut out to do that. So I think she does need to learn how the industry works and learn how, like, to treat people correctly and how to be the leader of a show. And she's going to do that by getting in the writer's room, making really good episodes of TV, and working her way up from there. I know it's not a crazy pitch or something that's overly funny, but that's my pitch.
Well, it is noble and reasonable. I do take issue. Like, I know that Girls sort of broke some ground. I don't know that she redefined the landscape with it. I mean, Girls was Golden Girls with monsters. I mean, it was not, this was not, like, it didn't change the landscape.
But so many things copied it afterwards.
You're also decades younger than me, so that show definitely means more to you than it would to me. Just, like, because I'm one of the people that rolled my eyes at it when they did the press release. I was
okay,
just
so
like,
the reason,
bitch.
Think about it. Looking, the HBO show.
Masterpiece.
Only existed because Girls existed.
I quit this podcast.
Am I wrong?
I quit. No. Listeners, please come to my new podcast starting next week called Fixing Krista Rosa. How dare you?
They would never have greenlit that show if Girls had not been successful. Dominic, look me in the face and tell me I'm wrong. I'm mad now. That show exists. They put it out like 2 years into Girls because it was the gay version of Girls.
You're wrong.
I don't even know if I mean that. I'm just looking you in the face, which proves I can lie.
Okay. Whatever you say.
Here's my pitch.
I am right.
Here's my pitch. Chris is right. I'm fine with you being right. I don't have an ego about it. But also, this is my last pitch on this podcast. Lena Dunham, you are just someone that can't keep their mouth shut. And most of the time, the shit that comes out of it post-Girls causes a controversy. So while Chris wants you to be quiet and have a below-the-line job,
Dominic,
bitch, I want her to host a late-night talk show that will last 10 episodes because she's going to insult every single person who comes on the show. And that's, I mean, I don't even need to give her advice about what to do. I want it to be the Lena Dunham show. And I just want her to be herself. It will last 10 episodes. That's my prediction. And that's it. Because I want her to keep going too far. I want her to insult the elderly. I want her to be racist. I want her to slut shame. I want her to compare every guest on her talk show to some human or natural tragedy, like the Holocaust or Hiroshima or just anything. That's what I want her to ask Nicole Kidman. That's what I want her to ask. I want her to ask Nicole Kidman, which was worse, the Stepford Wives or El Nino? That's what I want her to do.
The Stepford Wives is pretty bad. Oh, I gotta say.
So bad.
It's pretty bad. Dominic, I actually kind of agree. I think she could take Chris's advice and go that route. But I think I actually wouldn't mind for Lena to just sort of lean into it, right?
That's
like,
it.
You know,
Lean into it.
Kind of like a Caroline Calloway, right? Like, you know, what everybody thinks about
Dominic doesn't know who that is.
Okay. I don't know who that is. Everyone's nodding, and I'm like, no.
You're
52.
Like, who?
52.
I'm sorry. Who?
Who's Caroline Calloway?
She's an infamous scammer, and everyone knows that she's a scammer, and she's just sort of leaning into the scam. And I think that suits her. Rather than trying to pretend she doesn't scam or hasn't scammed, she's like, yeah, I scam, and you love that I scam. Kind of like Anna Delvey, right?
Okay,
like,
lean in.
Yeah, lean in.
Saw the miniseries.
There you go.
Yep.
All right, well, so Dominic, you pick Dominic, Bridget?
Ooh, so I meant to pick who's
you have to
pick.
You have to pick the winner. It seems that you're picking Dominic, which is fine.
I mean, your advice is like good, solid advice. Like, if she was a friend of mine, I would say go with Chris's advice. As a spectator, as someone who likes to gawk at shit shows, I gotta go Dominic on
this
one.
There we go.
Yeah, valid.
Chris, you were getting too close. We're right there. In the history of this podcast, we're only separated by like two wins. I needed to pull away. I needed this winner. Fuck you.
I'm glad we could get you a double.
Like a man today. I just don't sound like that.
I thought for sure that you were going to say that she was going to become like a right-wing pundit and like start like completely. When you started saying get louder, I was like, no, not her teaming up with Ben Shapiro.
Or Candace Owens. Yeah, that would be fantastic.
For sure that was going to be your pitch.
No.
I could see it though. I
just
could
for
see
no
it.
Reason she would do it. Just for no
reason.
Yeah,
just for the story.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, there we go. Good job, Dominic. Great win.
Thank you,
Bridget,
Chris.
Tell us where. Thank you, first of all. Bridget, thank you so much for being on this podcast. Tell everyone where they can find you. Tell them about your podcasts. Like, tell us everything.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. This was the best. This was super fun.
Thank you for coming.
You can listen to my podcast with Next Chapter Podcast called Beef. If you want to hear more about historical pettiness, you can listen to my podcast on iHeartRadio. There Are No Girls on the Internet. We have a two-part deep dive into the Lena Dunham sexual molestation allegations. It's more fun than that just made it sound. I swear it's like fun.
That's horrible.
Like, it's not a dark episode. I'll put it that way. I feel like I need to say that. You can follow me on Instagram at Bridget Marie in DC, and I guess that's it.
Wonderful.
Dominic, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me at my website, Dominterry.com, where you can be linked to tickets to my holiday show. In December, I will be going to Chicago and Boston, Atlanta, D.C., New York City, L.A., and San Francisco with Dom We Now Are Gay Apparel, my annual holiday show. Please come or find me on socials at Dominic Pupa. Chris DeRosa, my final question for you this week is, where can the listeners of our podcast and their friends, families, and associates find you?
You guys can find me at The Chris DeRosa. You can find the show at Fixing Famous People. Please leave a review and let us know who you want us to fix next. I wish you both well. And as always, where's Shelley? Goodbye.